RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 59 with guest Matthew Roach. Recorded Thursday, May 8th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
That's right. Howdy. How you doing?
I am well, sir. And Tech Ed is almost upon us.
Yes, it is.
Back to Orlando again. Third trip this year.
Our favorite place in the whole world.
Well, you only have to go for a week. I'm going for both weeks. So the weekend in between, I'm going to make friends with a margarita blender.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've been to Orlando, but it sure has changed over time.
Oh, sure. And you know, the frustrating part is that as much as I find that the city is so touristy, it makes me a little crazy, the conference center is really a phenomenal place.
Yeah, it really is good. It's located and laid out and has stuff around it for events. So it really is pretty much the perfect place to do something as huge and massive as TechEd.
Absolutely. And we have a great location right by the vendor space on the main drag of the main hall. We're going to be at the TechEd online stage pretty much the whole time.
Yep. So it would be let's see, doing some panels that I know you've been working on setting up,
right,
as well as the Speaker Idol contest, which is a whole lot of fun. You know, an opportunity for people who maybe otherwise wouldn't be seen or heard as potential speakers at TechEd and other events. They get their chance.
The other thing I find with Speaker Idol is you get these little 5-minute nuggets of knowledge about a topic you probably knew nothing about. It's like you know, eating an appetizer.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is pretty cool stuff.
Anyway, you know, by all means, come to TechEd. If you're not already booked, hurry. You're running out of time. And we'll see you there.
Yep. Looking forward to seeing some people, so be sure to stop by and say hi.
All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Microsoft SQL Server MVP Matthew Roach is a data architect with systems management innovator ConfigureSoft Incorporated, and is also Chief Software Architect of Integral Thought and Memory, a BI-focused consultancy. Matthew has worked with Microsoft SQL Server since the mid-90s, starting with SQL Server 6 and 6.5, and has been falling deeper and deeper in love with SQL Server with every passing year. As a Microsoft-certified trainer, Matthew has taught hundreds of database administrators and database developers how to better utilize SQL Server's capabilities. As a software developer and architect, Matthew has built dozens of applications that use the SQL Server platform. Welcome, Matthew.
Good afternoon, guys.
So where did we bump into each other? Was it at the MVP Summit?
Oh, it was actually at the SQL Connections or Dev Connections conference in Orlando the week after the MVP Summit.
Oh,
so
right.
We may well have been having drinks next to each other in Redmond, but when I saw that you were recording a .NET Rocks show in Orlando, I had to stop by and say hi, and here we are today.
And here we are today. And of course, I stole you away from .NET Rocks, brought you over to RunAs, because your favorite topic is SSIS, Integration Services.
Yep, that's correct. I'm certainly a developer at heart, but SSIS really crosses both sides of the IT divide. Both developers and IT professionals have a lot of use for it. There's a lot of power in the SSIS platform for both audiences.
And I got DTS to work for me way back when, but I just haven't put a lot of cycles into SSIS, but I understand it's completely different.
Well, it's about as different from DTS as, say, for example, C# is from VB4 or VB5, or as Windows 2008 is from, you know, Windows for Workgroups, for example. So they're both ETL tools. They're both designed to get data from points A, B, and C into points X, Y, and Z, and to do interesting things with it along the way. But SSIS is a complete grounds-up rewrite from DTS, and it thinks differently, it behaves differently, and I honestly think that people who have little experience or no experience with DTS will actually have a much simpler time really exploring and getting the most value from SSIS, because if you are very familiar with DTS, there are a lot of things that you'll need to unlearn before you can really take advantage of the productivity that SSIS can give you.
It's interesting because that was definitely the effect moving from the old studio environment to .NET, was that it was actually tough to unlearn than it was to actually learn the new tools.
Yeah, and for me, moving from VB6, because I was a VB and COM developer back in the day, moving from VB6 to VB.NET, there were so many things that were different, but the thing that I struggled with the most was that it looked the same, but it behaved very differently. So a lot of the keywords were the same, the language syntax was the same, but because it had the .NET framework under the hood, it just, you know, it wasn't your father's VB, as it were. And I think that people moving from DTS to SSIS will run into a lot of the same types of problems or a lot of the same disconnect, because SSIS has a lot of the same visual paradigms and is designed to solve the same problem. So it's got boxes and arrows and properties and so on, but putting things together is actually very, very different.
So what's so dramatically different? Why did Microsoft feel the need to have this dramatic change?
Well, I certainly can't speak for the design goals that they had or what their mindset was, but what I believe is that DTS was a simple tool for solving simple problems. It was very flexible and really gave you the ability to do ad hoc ETL. So, you know, anybody who has done anything with SQL Server has used the import-export wizard to, you know, dump information out of a table or load information into a table. And, you know, for little things like that, it just worked. But with the SQL Server 2005 release, Microsoft was really putting a heavy emphasis on the business intelligence platform.
Right.
And really scaling to true enterprise scale. So loading a data warehouse with DTS was very, very painful if you got past moderate data volumes. You just can't load a terabyte database with DTS and have acceptable performance. And in addition to that, even though it was very simple to do simple things with DTS, it was very complicated to do interesting or complex things with DTS. So the learning curve was very, very casual, very easy early on. But when you actually got to building a true enterprise ETL platform to load a data warehouse from lots of different sources, it got very complicated very quickly, and instead of working with the tool, you find yourself fighting against the tool more often than not.
And SSIS really breaks us out of that whole problem?
It does, and to be honest with you, even though I love SSIS, I try to temper that love with a little bit of honesty, I think that SSIS went a little bit too far in the other direction. So integration services is a great platform for building enterprise-scale ETL solutions, which is really what I do most of the time these days. But it's really kind of a crappy platform for building the little ad hoc things that the average DBA does on a day-to-day basis. And one of the reasons behind this is Microsoft, when building the data flow pipeline, really the core ETL component that moves the high volumes of data, they made it very, very heavily metadata bound. So the data flow pipeline is completely dependent on the columns and the data types and all of the information that defines what the sources look like and what the destinations look like. And there's just no flexibility at all in there. So as an example, if you have a source database that defines a name field as a single byte character string, so you know, say, for example, varchar 50, and you are loading it into a destination database that defines the same name field, but with an nvarchar 50, so a Unicode or dual byte character string, SSIS will not do any implicit data type conversions for you. So you will actually need to explicitly cast it from a varchar to an nvarchar, even though it's a widening conversion that could never, ever possibly fail.
Huh.
So the reason that they do that is because of the optimizations they get from having a strongly, strictly type, unchangeable memory buffer that they load the data into. So the performance that you get because of this restriction is phenomenal. It's just amazing performance compared to any other ETL tool that I've used. But the price that you pay is requiring a lot of discipline when you're building your packages, when you're building your data flows, and it also can introduce some fragility and inflexibility into the packages as well. So if your source or destination database changes, you have to go through and update your packages to reflect those changes, which is not always what you want.
Let's make sure we get the acronyms straight here for people that maybe this is new information for them. What is ETL?
Okay, so ETL is extract, transform, and load. This is basically the overall problem domain, if you will, for moving data between different systems. So for the most part, you will extract data out of a source system. If it's a relational database, you use a select statement, but it could be a web service, it could be an Excel file, it could be a text file. So there are lots of different mechanisms that you can use to extract that data. Integration Services has a different set of data source components that it uses to perform that extraction. For transform, these are ways that you would change the shape of the data between the source and the destination. So transforming could be something like a pivot, it could be sorting, it could be aggregation, it could be something as simple as calculating a field, or it could be something like doing a lookup where you are pulling in a business key or natural key from your source system, and you need to tie that to a surrogate key, like an identity, you know, some arbitrary key in your destination system. So Integration Services has transformation components in the data flow that can do all of these different things. And it even has the ability to allow you to write your own VB.NET code, or using Integration Services and SQL Server 2008, you can actually do VB or C#. And then for the load part, this is where you actually load the data into your destination database. Integration Services has a set of data destination components, either for SQL Server, for OLEDB, for flat files, Excel files, what have you. And in addition to that, in SQL Server 2008, Microsoft is introducing a new set of native connectors, native connection types, so that, for example, if you are loading information into an Oracle data warehouse, which may not sound like something you're likely to do with SQL Server Integration Services, but the Microsoft BI stack is very common in Oracle and other third-party environments.
Right.
So if you're loading information into an Oracle data warehouse, with SQL 2005, your performance can suffer because the Oracle data source that Microsoft has written for 2005 doesn't have true bulk load capabilities. With 2008, they've either purchased or licensed, I'm not sure which one it is, but they've acquired third-party technology that they're shipping as free adapters for the enterprise edition of Integration Services 2008, so that you can get much better performance and better connectivity with third-party systems such as Oracle and Teradata and SAP. But basically, between the extract, transform, and load, that covers a very wide variety of scenarios to get data from wherever it is today, change it into the shape that it needs to be, and load it into where the data needs to be tomorrow, which as often as not is a data mart or data warehouse.
I can take information that sits in lots of different places, pull it all together, build some kind of an integration workflow, even combine information from different original sources, and then end up with a data warehouse that really makes the best use of all the data that's available to me.
Yep, that's absolutely correct. And one of the projects that I'm working on today, so I work for a company called ConfigureSoft Incorporated, and they're a systems management vendor. ConfigureSoft's flagship product that probably most systems administrators will be familiar with is called Enterprise Configuration Manager. So it does change management, compliance, patch management, and so on, stable, mature product, et cetera. The project that I'm working on is actually designing and building a new product called Configuration Intelligence Analytics, which could sort of be summarized as BI for IT. So it's taking a lot of the business intelligence capabilities and applying them to IT enterprise configuration management data.
Interesting. So we're doing analytics on our information systems infrastructure.
Exactly.
So that's a great
think
idea.
Think about the data that you deal with and the systems that you deal with. Pretty much any big IT shop has some sort of monitoring system. So it might be ConfigureSoft ECM. It might be MOM or Service Center. There are provisioning systems like SMS or Service Center. Right. There are help desk systems such as Remedy, Mercury, and so on, network monitoring systems, inventory. You know, think about the CMDB that the ITIL or MLF discuss. Think about being able to take information from all of these different systems and pull them into a centralized data warehouse so that your CIO or CEO or CTO can see dashboards showing the overall health of their enterprise, but also so that the operational people can drill down and see which machines are in compliance, which are out of compliance, you know, what are the trends, doing prediction, figuring out, for example, which machines have the highest number of support tickets or help desk tickets that come in, so that you can see maybe this model of computer has a higher cost, using that information to be more proactive instead of reactive. And that sort of thing is something that probably any IT professional is familiar with, since that's the data that they deal with every day. But integration services as a platform really gives you the ability to pull in data from any source and put it into any destination. And the interesting part comes from being able to pull in information from multiple disparate systems. So your business is running, you know, let's say if you're in retail, you've got your point of sale system, you've got your inventory system, you've got your human resources system. These were all built by different vendors. None of them are aware, neither of them is aware of any of the others, but they all apply to your business. If you find the common data points, the intersection points between them, pull them into a data warehouse using integration services, you can now make better decisions because you can see the patterns and the trends across the systems that you could never see by looking at an individual system on its own.
And it's free, right? I mean, so many shops that are using SQL Server that aren't using integration services, what's going on there? There seems to be a gap, right? A lot of IT people aren't even aware that it exists, or they don't know how to use it. How do we address that?
Well, there's two different points. So first of all, yes, it's free. If you own a SQL Server license, Standard Edition or Enterprise Edition, you own SQL Server integration services as well. So if you own SQL Server, you already own integration services, so it's effectively free. And I just don't think that a lot of operational DBAs really care or think about what's beyond the relational database. That's their comfort zone. That's what SQL Server has always been. And unless they are pushed, looking at something like analysis services, reporting services, or integration services, it's something that, yeah, it's part of the SQL Server brand, but it's not my database. I think that's really something that there just needs to be a sea change in the mindset of the people who are working with the databases, and I don't have a solution to that one, I'm afraid.
Well, and to your point, you did say, you know, you do some of the customization in SSIS, in C# and VB.NET. I mean, that immediately, I think, sounds to a DBA like that's a dev tool.
Well, and I'm not going to let those devs touch my database, right?
Yeah, that's right. Damn those devs.
Yeah.
One of the things that I believe that is a reason why I love integration services so much is because I'm a developer at heart, and integration services thinks like a developer does. But despite that, and despite the fact that the scripting that you can do inside of integration services is actual .NET code, so it's VB.NET or C#, 9 times out of 10, you don't need to write that script.
Oh, interesting.
And the problem in DTS, or the problem that I had with DTS, was that in order to do anything interesting, you had to go into that ActiveX script task and
right.
write these cheesy little VB script scripts that performed poorly. There was no IntelliSense, there was no debugging capabilities. It was just ugly all around, and it was quick and it was dirty, but in order to do almost anything in DTS, you needed to use script.
So you're saying we don't have to use a lot of .NET code in SSIS. Generally, it is the sort of drag and drop, click the relationships together kind of model.
Yep, and I would even go so far as to say that anytime you find yourself writing .NET code inside integration services, you need to step back and really think about what the existing tasks and transformations can do, because probably at least 80% of the time that I see .NET code inside a package, it's not because it needs to be there. It's because the person who wrote the code just wasn't familiar enough with what the built-in tools could do. They didn't spend the time to see, oh, well, if I take this transformation and this one and use them together, I get what I need.
Interesting. And so, you know, the tendency to fall back on the skills we do have in .NET might be the problem. And it just suddenly occurred to me, you know, .NET is creeping into the lives of administrators everywhere. I think PowerShell is a big aspect of that, that we could do so much with PowerShell, but you really, it's, you need a little bit of .NET skill to make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, to jump back to an earlier point as well, you were talking about, you know, both how do we get DBAs to be aware of integration services, and how do we get DBAs to learn it? How do we get them to understand it? I think the second one is actually a much simpler problem to solve, or much simpler question to answer. And the reason for that is actually the tutorials that Microsoft has built into SQL Server Books Online. So, you know, if you have SQL Server, you've got Books Online. As part of that, they have a set of samples and tutorials, one of which is the Building a Simple ETL Package tutorial. And basically what it will do is it will load in information from a text file, do a couple lookups, and then load the information into the AdventureWorks DW database, so one of the sample databases that ships with SQL Server 2005. And then in later steps of the tutorial, you update it so that instead of loading in a single file, it will loop through all of the text files in a directory. Instead of having a hard-coded path for the connection string for the database and the folder that it's looking for the files, it will use package configurations, which are a way that you can store property values outside of the package so that moving from a development environment to a test or prod environment is much simpler. You don't ever need to touch the package if you use configuration. So using expressions, using logging and auditing, using error redirection so that you can dump any problem records coming out of the source into an audit table or an audit file to go back and look at later. And basically, it starts off simple. The tutorial explains, this is the business problem. This is what we're going to do. This is how it works. It's got great step-by-step instructions, and it guides you through end-to-end to build something that you can do in an hour or two, see a great subset of the tools that integration services provides, solve a very common real-world problem, and by the time that you're done, you've touched, you know, at least 50% of the things that you would need to use integration services on a day-to-day basis. And not only have you touched them, you've built something that you can execute and test and deploy. And I've been known to criticize the SQL Server 2005 documentation from time to time, especially some of the developer documentation. But this tutorial is a highlight that I just can't say enough good things about. And if anybody is out there and they've looked at integration services and they've seen all these tabs and all these toolbox options and it's in Visual Studio and it looks like a dev thing, go through these tutorials and see how simple it can be.
Nice.
And it'll definitely change your mind, or at least open your eyes.
You know, one of the things that I ran into with DTS was, and you mentioned it, I mean, writing VBScript was pretty horrible, but there was really no way to back that code up in a useful way. In fact, the whole management of your DTS packages and deployment of DTS packages was horrible. How is it different in SSIS?
Well, let me jump back to my integration services think like a developer point. So one of my biggest complaints about DTS was that the way that DTS wanted you to work, the way that it made it easy and straightforward to work, was very similar to, and you know, picture this and cringe as I say it, very similar to a DBA opening up a table in grid view in Enterprise Manager and manually editing cells to update tables on a production live database. So basically with DTS, your master package was the it was whatever happened to be deployed. There was no way, no easy way to version them, to have them under source control or anything like that. So whatever was out on the production server, that was the package. And the way that you edited it was you connected to the production server and changed it.
It's terrifying.
Yes, horrifying. So I have shivers just talking about it. I feel like someone will come in and slap my knuckles. Integration services, on the other hand, is designed to be part of any standard build or deployment or promotion process. So the packages that you edit are DTSX files. So they're XML files that you can edit using Business Intelligence Development Studio, which is basically just a special project plugin, a set of tools that plugs into the Visual Studio shell. But using BIDS, as it's called, BIDS will allow you to open up these packages from the file system, to edit them, to test them, you can debug them. But when you're done, essentially what you have is a set of files on the file system. And because of this, just like with any of your, you know, if you're a developer, your C# or VB files or projects, or if you're a DBA, think about the SQL Server Management Studio projects that you have with the libraries of script utilities that you've built up.
Sure.
Hopefully you have these under source control, either using SourceSafe or TFS or Subversion or, you know, whatever your favorite source control tool is. But with the DTSX files in your BIDS projects, you can basically treat them the same way, having your source control version or your development version being your master, and then you can copy them to a test environment. Once you test them, copy them to your production environment, and any changes that need to be made can go through that same basic promotion process again. And just like with DTS, you can either deploy your packages to the file system, so they're just, you know, somewhere on the hard drive on the server, or you can deploy them into the MSDB database, and they actually live as blob data inside some of the system tables in MSDB. There are pros and cons to either one, not really, you know, one being better than the other, but the deployment story is much more structured. And for people who are used to working the DTS way, to jump back to the beginning of our conversation, if you're used to doing things in this ad hoc cowboy way, you're going to hate integration services because it's not designed to let you do things the cheap, easy, lazy way. It really enforces some degree of structure. And obviously, you don't need source control, even though you should have it. You don't need a structured and documented promotion process, even though you should have it. But essentially, you must do your development on the file system. So if you want to have your packages in an ad hoc way, you'll just need to have the BIDS tools installed on your production server so that you can open up your packages from the file system there. But it's really designed to encourage good practices at the expense of some of the flexibility that DTS provided.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. And one of the ironic things is, even though, you know, the picture that I just painted makes it sound like the deployment story and integration services is like, boy, this is, you know, the way that it should have been the whole time. In reality, the deployment story is one of the most painful things in integration services, not because the tools aren't there, but because a lot of the documentation can be misleading. A lot of the tools that Microsoft provides that are related to deployment aren't really the tools that you want to use. So ironically enough, the most commonly asked talk that I'm asked to give at conferences or users group sessions at things like that, it's not development topics, it's actually integration services deployment. So if you look at the integration services project inside Visual Studio, you'll see inside every project there's this data sources node. This is what I call the poison candy. So it's shiny, it's red, it's delicious. It's just hanging out there saying, use me or eat me, eat me. But basically what this is it's a way to reuse connection information across packages. So integration services is a concept called a connection manager, which is basically a little wrapper around a database connection or a file connection, and it gives packages a consistent way to access those external resources. And a data source allows you to define the properties of a connection manager in a little DS file, and then you just reference them from lots of different packages. And you see this in demos, you see it in presentations, you see it in classes, and boy, it works great until you actually try to do something in the real world. So basically what the problem is these data sources are not part of SSIS. They're part of Visual Studio.
Yeah, exactly.
So anytime that you want to deploy your packages and run them, say, for example, from the command line or from a SQL Server agent job, these data sources can't follow you because the work is actually performed by the Visual Studio add-ins in bids. So all of the things that were great when you were building the package literally don't exist when you deploy the package. And there are three or four different little gotchas like that, little different types of poison candy that are scattered here and there. And this is what I was doing at SQL Connections last month, and one of the presentations I'll be giving at TechEd IT Professionals in Orlando next month is deployment best practices, so what to do, what to avoid, and really how to have that seamless, repeatable, scriptable deployment that everybody really wants.
You know, I always think of SSIS in the context of ETL loading data warehouses, but you sort of hinted at the idea that this might be a tool we'd use for version migration, that it could be part of an install of an app that updates the database to the next version. Is that true?
It's certainly possible. Integration Services has a whole bunch of different tasks, where a task is, you know, one of the drag and drop components in the toolbox that make up the control flow of the package. And some of these tasks include like the file system task for copying files. There's an execute SQL task where you can either execute a literal string, point it at a file that contains a SQL script, or at a package variable that contains a SQL script. So anything that is, you know, if you think about it as a data-centric workflow tool as well, that's another way to think about it outside of the core ETL scenario. But you definitely don't want to get into the habit of thinking of it as a generic workflow tool, because it's more specialized than something like Workflow Foundation would be.
But I could see you building an SSIS package that's take this database from version 1 to version 2, and it's creating the new tables and moving data across and doing transformations where it needs to and adding in additional structures. It seems to make sense to me. It would be a nice packaging of it.
Yep. Well, the one thing that I would say is that if it's all in one database and if the transformations that are taking place are trivial, then it may actually make sense, both from a simplicity perspective and from a performance perspective, to simply do it in SQL scripts.
Right.
Which, you know, what we've traditionally done. The big differentiation point for Integration Services is when you're either moving from database to database, so the data flow pipeline is truly an incredibly high performance in-memory data flow transformation pipeline, so we'll stream the data from one source to another. But if it's in the same database, the locality of data that you get just doing a insert into select, with the select statement doing whatever transformations you need, you know, if it makes sense, without ever having to have the data move out of the memory space of SQL Server, you know, you can't compete with that performance.
Sure.
And so if you can do it in SQL scripts alone, to me it makes sense to keep doing it that way. But if your migration or upgrade story does get more complicated than that, Integration Services certainly could be part of that story.
And I could see one place where SSIS would shine in a scenario like that. It would be error handling. It's that I run into a situation where my customer's data set creates an exception in the new version. What am I going to do about that?
Yep, that's absolutely correct. One of the greatest things that the data flow does that you cannot do in Transact SQL is error redirection. So even though the underlying structure is made up of memory buffers, the Integration Services data flow has a logical data pipeline. So data flows in from sources and goes to destinations. And at practically any point along the way, there are possibilities for either errors or truncations. And you can build up your data flow. You just drag the little red arrow off to another destination so that if a given record has problems, you redirect it and either, you know, depending on your requirements and your needs, you could either ignore it or dump it into an audit table for future examination to find out what was wrong. Whereas with Transact SQL, it's all or nothing. It's a transaction. So if you've got one problem, the whole thing dies.
Matthew, we're just about out of time here. Any call-outs, anything we've missed out on SSIS?
Well, I would say that we have the tutorials and books online. That's the best place to start. After that, there are excellent forums on the MSDN and TechNet websites, and The URL that I shared with you guys up front is pointing at the MSDN forums URL, but they're really the same forums in either location. There's a great community of integration services folks out there, a lot of MVPs, some people from the product group, and just other experienced SSIS professionals who answer questions. I haven't been spending as much time there as I want to lately since my project work has been keeping me awfully busy. But after you get through the tutorials and start using it regularly, odds are you're going to run into something where it doesn't make sense. Those forums are really the best place to go out on the internet. So I heartily recommend that to everyone. And if any of your listeners are going to be in Orlando next June or this June next month for the integration or for the TechEd IT Professionals Conference, I would love to see anybody who listens at my two sessions. I'm doing one on customizing package configurations, which is sort of an advanced session, a little heavy on the code, but I'm also doing SQL Server Integration Services deployment best practices, which will cover a lot of the things that everyone needs to know and sort of call out the gotchas and the poison candy, as it were, to put it all together into a set of easy-to-follow guidelines.
Awesome. Matthew Roche, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure speaking with you both.
And we'll see you next week on Run As Radio.